What's up, man?
I'm getting some dinner.
It's another scene of eating.
Thank God I'm starving.
Yeah, long day. We started at like 9 a.m., took some written tests, and now we're... Then we went and simmed for hours. We simulated. Now we're drinking water and iced tea and eating chips and tacos and burritos.
We got to get up early tomorrow. Well, that's not really early, but early enough. Got to be back out there at 9 o'clock in the morning for oral exams and our check rides.
Oral exams are when they check out the inside of our mouths.
Far and away, the most challenging aspect of this job is regularly flying a wide variety of different aircraft types. Being current and qualified on more than one large jet at a time is not, by any definition, normal. Because we operate under private regulations as opposed to airline pilots who operate with stricter rules, and because we keep more than one type current, we can actually legally go 2 years between check rides, but we still have to be checked on at least one type rating every 12 calendar months in order to extend the others. We typically have a pretty good idea of which aircraft are likely to come down the pipeline based on industry trends, and at any given time, we're usually current on between 6 and 8 different aircraft. The two which we're always current on are the A320 and 737, our bread and butter. For as long as I can remember now, we've done the A320 and 737 recurrence back-to-back on one trip to the schoolhouse. And for the last couple, we've contracted with Aerostar down in Kissimmee, Florida. They have both sims, they understand our business, and they're always very accommodating. For me, doing the 7-3 and the bus at the same time is a great way to keep us sharp on our most common ferry mission. It's not unusual for us to fly both types in the same week, and cramming down all the knowledge on both at the same time reinforces the skill set that we need to master.
So we just finished our A320 PCs, and now we're eating. We're at a like Japanese like steakhouse sushi place. We got some poofy cocktails and.
Yeah, cool looking cocktails. We were going to sit down at the teppanyaki bar and, watch the volcano.
Yeah, but we decided, we'll take it a little easier. We'll just drink some, God knows, Disney Mai Tais here in Orlando.
But I was impressed.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
It was efficient.
Yeah, Stuart, our instructor, an unbelievable amount of experience,
Yeah.
He's had decades of experience. Being an instructor, running programs.
It's always good when the instructors are older than us.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, you did, instead of rolling my speed back for me on the no-flap landing, you did roll my heading bug, which was interesting, but I was able to recover from that.
Well, you were doing so good that, I had to kind of break up the monotony. I was falling asleep over there.
Yeah.
But you did good. You called for the flight directors off when you saw that it was going off.
Yeah.
Just kind of like a test within the test.
And then I slammed it in really hard.
All they have is pictures of guys, commercials of guys, kissing guys, and AIDS medicine.
Jesus.
Maybe they're trying to tell you something.
That's why I'm watching. Yeah, I'm
in. Those are targeted ads, Jim.
They know their audience.
They found your search history.
That's all right.
As we endured the 2.5-hour van ride from Quito to Latacunga, Bob took a call from Jim Nazarkovich, the chief technical officer for AELF, one of our many lessor clients. Jim is an airplane guru on the engineering side, and we've worked together for the better part of the last 15 years, working as many projects around the world, including this one, a 3-ship, multifaceted Boeing 737 delivery operation that spanned nearly a year.
Well, we own Airbuses, A330s, we own 340s, 737s, G4s. The diversity of this company is where the value is, really. Yeah.
AELF had acquired three more late model 800s and deployed them on a multi-year lease with Fly Safair, a South African low-cost carrier that also happens to be a client of ours going back to about 2010 when we delivered aircraft for their 737 freighter operation in support of the UN. The first NG came out of Canada around the end of 2023, and the second two airplanes came from a different, now defunct airline in South Africa called Comair in the back half of 2024. Our job was to move each of the three aircraft to a maintenance facility in Latacunga, Ecuador, then test fly them after they underwent heavy maintenance before ultimately delivering them to Johannesburg, where they'd enter service hauling paying passengers. Pretty much every time an airplane is leased to a new operator, it needs to undergo a maintenance event to bridge its configuration, equipment, paint, and routine maintenance schedule to the specifications of the receiving airline. These checks are performed by an MRO, which stands for Maintenance, Repair, and Overhaul Facility, and there are many of them scattered around the world. Jim, throughout his 50-year career, spent a lot of time living and working in South America and helped launch the 737 repair station capabilities at DIAF, a military and civilian repair station affiliated with and run by the Ecuadorian Air Force General Command in the mountainous Cotopaxi region of Ecuador in the city of Latacunga. The airport in Latacunga sits at 9,200 feet above sea level, and Quito, where we arrived by airline, is at 7,900 feet. So the long car ride up to the facility was mostly uphill. The air was thin, and Bob and I were constantly reminded of that fact every time we struggled to catch our breath doing normal activities like climbing a set of stairs.
The driver's getting lunch.
It's taking a while to get here.
Flight test is one of the more complicated and labor-intensive services that we provide as ferry pilots. And until now, I haven't been able to properly capture the essence of one of these operations with my cameras. Technically, these flights are not test flights per the official classification because we're not testing uncertified aircraft or systems. Instead, we call them demonstration flights because we're simply demonstrating the functionality of an airplane's primary and backup systems. We do these demos on every aircraft type and typically prior to ferrying an aircraft to their new home. With each demo, there are specific tasks that we need to accomplish. There are Boeing and Airbus published flight profiles that we can follow as a default, but more often than not, especially with Boeings, an airline will have their own modified variant of the procedure. We study these procedures the night before to prepare for them, and then we do a pre-flight briefing both in the office and in the cockpit to ensure everybody's on the same page before setting off.
Or it might be only low and 250 knots. Okay, here we go.
Okay.
Okay, flight test procedure, 250 knots, 15.
Yes, it's 15. That's too low.
Nah, that should be fine. 250 knots and 15.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll be totally fine. We'll do that when we're doing everything else.
While a demo can be accomplished using just two pilots, it's more common to have a third, usually a management pilot from the receiving airline, along in the jump seat to both observe the operation and to help out with the tasks themselves and the documentation process. In the case of this flight, we actually had a fourth crew member, a maintenance engineer from DIAF, who was there to take down a list of any unsatisfactory results so that engineering will know firsthand what each issue is, to more quickly assess and repair any defects once we return to the MRO.
Yeah, whatever you want to do, man. It's all good.
What you doing, Bob?
Of course you are!
Just like any other flight, one of us does the pre-flight walk-around inspection on arrival. For demo flights, we take a little closer look at things because the plane is coming out of a maintenance event and the chances of a missing panel, a pin or a cover, or a loose fastener are a little higher than normal. The pre-flight process prior to pushback takes about 30 minutes, and then we head to the cockpit to do our operational briefing. Once airborne, cockpit duties for a demo flight are a lot busier than a normal point-to-point flight, so we delegate tasks quite differently. For this one, I sat in the left seat and performed the duties of the flying pilot. On the ground, for takeoff and for landing, it's the same as any other flight. The flying pilot flies the jet, and the pilot monitoring, Bob in the right seat, runs the radios, and the first officer flows. Once airborne on a demo flight, however, things change a bit. The flying pilot both flies the airplane and runs the radio, and the right seater runs through every test profile. The third pilot, when present, guides the crew through the different check maneuvers and records the data from each test on the flight profile sheet, noting any defects and indications.
Sweet's alive, got 100, you know. Get back here. D1, rotate. Osprey, coming up. That's picking up to 1.
Thank you.
Before pushback, a few of the guys from the maintenance facility asked if we could do a low pass with a wing wave, and of course we obliged. In fact, I gave one of them a camera. It didn't take long to get up to altitude from a field elevation of almost 10,000 feet, and within 15 minutes of departure, we got things started on the demo.
That's you, Jim.
Commercial airliners are complex, self-contained machines that rely on a variety of systems to operate. Hydraulic power moves the flight controls, raises and lowers the gear and flaps. Electrical systems provide AC and DC electrical power for the computers and electrical components. And the pneumatic systems run the pressurization, ice protection, and air conditioning. But because failures happen, every system on an airplane has multiple redundancies which allow for fail-safe operations even if one of the engines itself fails. While any flight does a fine job at demonstrating normal functions of an aircraft, only a special demo flight profile walks a crew through intentionally shutting down the normal systems in order to demonstrate and record the parameters of the backup systems. These flights are busy. Everyone on board is doing their own thing while at the same time being mindful of what everyone else is doing. Some tasks, like the manual reversion, require everyone's involvement. The manual reversion test demonstrates the mechanical backup system for the flight controls in the event of a hydraulic failure.
This is Coleman. Can you hold that for this test?
Okay.
Yeah, it's already gone. Okay. Thanks.
Push rods and cables controlling the ailerons and elevators instead of hydraulic actuators. Think driving a 1970 Cadillac Eldorado with a busted power steering pump.
Okay, all right, Eddie, Steve.
Yep.
Yeah.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Five turns, hey, go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
I'm
up. That was for us.
As flying pilot during these demos, my job is simple. Fly. Fly like I'm buzzing around in a Cessna 172 single pilot. I just kind of zone out on the ATC feed and take in the scenery. It's chaos. The other two guys fluttering all around, flipping switches, trying to write with a cheap hotel pen on a stack of papers bound by a single paperclip. It gets busy though when they're testing all the manual gear and flap stuff, and I'm trying to configure for the approach.
So play the whole one, sir. Medic 3-5, sir.
Guayaquil is a coastal city down at sea level. It's only 120 miles southwest of where we took off. Normally, a demo flight takes off and lands at the same airport, but because Latacunga is mainly a military airport, fuel had to be trucked in and was considerably more expensive. We'd stop there for a 45-minute gas and go, and it also gave us a much safer environment to test the autoland system, something we needed to accomplish for the demo. That's right, the 737 can actually land itself once it's configured for landing, and it did so almost as good as we can as humans.
Right turn,
and
it did the same thing to us last time.
It was a good test overall, no defects. The autoland was a bit squirrely, but that wasn't the airplane's fault. The Guayaquil airport doesn't have a Cat 3 ILS approach, meaning you can't land there in zero visibility anyway. Essentially, the only time one would actually autoland out in the wild. We quickly topped off fuel, then departed for the 20-minute flight back up to Latacunga. We didn't have much daylight left, and landing in the mountains at night, even though doable, is not preferred. When your job entails living out of a suitcase and you have to be able to perform at a high level with constant jet lag, staying at a clean, comfortable hotel is critical. The four-star major brands are definitely the first choice, but those just don't exist in most non-major cities, and in Latacunga, the options are few.
Hold on, are we on the same floor?
Yeah. Are you on one?
Yeah, I'm on 121. Yeah. How are we gonna fit in here?
What if we just squeeze?
Jesus!
We have to touch each other.
In these cases, we use the price method. Whichever hotel costs the most is where we stay.
Oh, man.
This is a high-dollar place, man.
Yeah.
Pretty nice.
Seriously, I think our suites are $35.
And when $35 is the most expensive option, you don't look at pictures, you don't read reviews, you simply book it and hope for the best.
The other ones are just like single rooms.
Yeah.
And it's more like a, not that I know what a jail cell looks like, but it's what I just do.
Well, let's check it out. Oh, I think I just broke the floor.
It's interesting.
Kitchenette. It's like a little tiny couch. It's like a couch for little tiny people. Little kitchen. And a bedroom. This is nice. I like it. Not too bad. A lot of Conga, Ecuador. This is what you get. At the Hotel Joshid Imperial. So where are we going?
Well, we've got a chicken place there, and chicken place is a fab.
I'd seen that sign before. A chicken giving an approving thumbs up, some ominous looking bags, a guinea pig? No thanks.
And we've got a Chinese place. Chinese place is actually good.
All right, that's where we're going then, eh?
I'd say let's start out with Chinese. Who
would have thought that there's a good Chinese place in Ecuador?
Bob and I, along with Mike, the airworthiness inspector, settled on Chinese food. Tomorrow, the rest of the crew would arrive, and Bob wanted to save the supposedly best place in town for then.
Wait, there's a downtown Lada Kunga?
Yeah, we're going to go down to the town square, and there's a place that's owned by an American chef down there.
Oh, we are?
Yeah.
Like, this is already happening?
Well, if we're here tomorrow, we're definitely
here. All right.
Because it's closed tonight, otherwise we'd be down there at night.
Ah, I see. Well, this doesn't look bad. There's a lot of people eating here.
Gringo and the Fat Lady or something, but I think it's called.
All right.
Not the Chinese place, but the place.
The Gringo and the Fat Lady?
Well, I don't know if it's the Fat Lady. It's just what I call
the overweight lady?
it's El Gringo and El Gordo or something like
so
that.
So just the fat ass.
Maybe it's the Fat Gringo, I don't know.
Since the aircraft made it through the demo without any issues, our ops team started applying for permits. Two more nomadic pilots would arrive down in Ecuador tomorrow, and we'd be ready to roll as a heavy crew across the South Atlantic as soon as the logistics were in place. The haul over to South Africa was a two-leg ferry with a fuel stop in Recife, Brazil. About 6 hours for that leg, then we'd take the 737-800 as far as it could possibly go non-stop to Joburg, scheduled at 8:30. Once we got to Johannesburg, there was another ex-Com Air 737 to bring back to Lada Kunga, and Mike needed to come along with us in order to sign off the next plane for flight.
You look very comfortable.
Yeah.
Like you're kind of in a pool on a raft.
With no passenger seats yet installed, between the flight attendant stations and the cockpit, we had exactly enough belted jump seats for the crew of seven. The two South African reps, Mike, and the crew of four. One of the four pilots on this crew was Pat Lewis, and it was his first live 737 operation ever. Pat's been with us on the Airbus for about 2 years now, and his story is an interesting tale of right guy, right place, and right time. For me, airplanes are far more than just a job. They're a huge part of my life. I have four sons, and so by default, airplanes are also a huge part of their life as well. Family trips in the Giordano house often meant packing into the Aerostar, and I was never short of in-house volunteers willing to co-pilot on hops over to maintenance or a pilots and paws dog rescue flight. It was no surprise to me that two of them wanted to follow in my footsteps and become pilots.
Are you ready to go, buddy?
Ryan, my youngest, is working on his private pilot certificate now at age 16, and Tyler, my 19-year-old, is finishing up his instrument and commercial in college. Much like Ryan, Tyler also started his training when he was in high school, and he finished his PPL his 12th grade year.
All right, you can film while I start up. Ooh, these are hot. Hot as hell.
All right, electric's on.
Should I put mine?
Throttles are cracked. Yep. Give it some gas. And then clear.
I most certainly didn't push aviation on them at all. In my experience, you have to really want to fly airplanes if you're going to make a career out of it. This business will kick you when you're down. Will take you away from the people you love, frustrate, even scare you on occasion. It's just not the kind of thing you dip your toes into. You have to want this. You have to go all in. But for those of us who have it running through our veins, nothing compares. There's no substitute or alternative. Growing up in the city of Philadelphia without much money and with literally no exposure to aviation, I stumbled into this love affair at age 12, the first time I ever rode on an airplane. It was in the back of a US Air 737-200 from Philly to Atlanta, and I remember every moment, and there was no turning back. It became my obsession. For my boys, it was just always right there in front of them for the taking. They grew up traveling around by air, and of course, I always had small planes around, so I guess it was always just a matter of time. Having been a flight instructor myself 25 years ago, I knew how important it was to find the right instructor from the start, and I can imagine that teaching the offspring of an experienced professional pilot is probably a pretty stressful situation for a young CFI. By pure chance, Tyler's instructor turned out to be one of the best. I kept my distance, trying not to micromanage the process, and it was clear from the get-go that this guy was the real deal. And when I got the call that his first solo was likely to happen, I had no worries at all that Tyler was ready. That CFI was Pat Lewis. He was a short-timer, counting the days until putting Cessnas in the rearview after several years of instructing. He had ATP mens, but was hired into a pool to become an FO through a cadet program at a low-cost airline with animals painted on the tail.
Looking good.
Yeah. Tyler, radio check.
Loud and clear.
The wait for a class date was taking longer than expected, so I offered him the opportunity to intern at Nomadic to learn something about the bus before heading for training.
Good morning. We're in Bangor, Maine. We came up here from Tampa yesterday. Wes is in charge today, and we'll be taking this Airbus A320 eastbound to Indonesia via Keflavik, Cairo, Mumbai, and then into Jakarta. So it's a Frontier, former Frontier Airbus A320, now in the Air Asia paint with a hockey rink in the back. And with Pat hiding. And
oh, hey, Steve.
Yeah. Hey. And as you can see, it's a nice clear morning here.
Over the years, we've offered internships to a select lucky few. Pat was the first one that managed to convince us to keep him around. His first trip, tagging along as the third wheel with Wes and myself and our good friend Jim, who was simply hitching a ride back home to Thailand. Florida to Indonesia eastbound is no joke, so Pat got the full experience. We stopped a few times on this one, and I took advantage of having an extra guy on board by making Pat the designated cameraman on my Icelandic pizza review, which, partly thanks to his handy camera work, actually made the newspaper in Iceland. Seriously.
Actually, all right. So we've got our Keflavik catering, and I've talked about Keflavik pizza for some time because, shockingly, Icelandic pizza is pretty good. This elevator music is something else, man. So let's see what we've got. We've got cheese. We've got, this one is travesty, man. There's bacon, but there's pineapple. There's, I don't know what, some sort of meat. There's a bunch of stuff on this one. This one is, I don't know, man. I'm not doing it. It's a little too much for me. And then my personal favorite, the meat lover, which contains several varieties of meat,
including sausage, pepperoni, cheese. It's quite good.
It wasn't all fun and games, of course. We also taught him how to create user fixes in the MCDU and put him to work.
All right, so that's our one. All right, so we have up to where you made one more
point. You guys run out of user waypoints?
Yeah.
How many you got left?
Not many at all. Almost to the end.
See you in the airport.
We're in good shape.
Yeah.
But once we reached Egypt, it was back to fun and games. We took a long overnight, and Jim dragged us out of our hotel rooms at sunrise to see the pyramids.
When you come here, Muhammad Ali Pasha, you don't know where is the entrance of the pyramid. We cut it from up and down, and after I take this stone, they built the mosque Muhammad Ali Pasha, citadel downtown in Cairo.
I know, it's touristy, and I've since heard they abuse the poor camels, so I won't be doing that ever again, but we had an intern with us, and I had a camera, so why not?
Where's Wes?
No, we'll go from other side, you meet him other side.
Oh, okay.
Have you been to Memphis?
No, or do they have a pyramid?
Yeah, the vast, profound pyramid.
The trip was a long one, and Pat caught on quick. While there's no substitute for experience, Pat had something about him that was different. I don't know exactly how to put my finger on it, but it just worked. The kid is a natural-born ferry pilot, and that's just something that can't be taught. Bob and I decided to give him an administrative role at Nomadic while he waited for that airline call, which never came. After 6 months and no class date, I made him an offer he couldn't refuse. We sent him down to Florida to get his ATP and his A320 type at the same time, and before long, he was a type-rated Airbus FO for us who happily jumped at any opportunity to fly a trip for Nomadic. And his first trip after getting typed? A full circle moment, where we got to bring my son Tyler along on a factory delivery of a brand new A320neo from Toulouse.
Active.
Getting a lesson?
Yeah. Hey, sound good. Alright, so we're gonna go to our first point. So
why don't they have purple Red Bull in America?
Really? Why?
Cheers.
For Pat, this mission was the first of many, and over the last 2 years, he's been part of dozens of A320 operations around the world. Because the types are so similar, we qualified him as second in command on the A330 to serve as a cruise relief pilot on that, and then this past year, he officially got typed on the 737, and is now honing his skills, learning how to manage effectively bouncing between Boeing and Airbus, a necessary skill for a ferry pilot. Later this year, Cockpit Casual will return once again, and while of course Bob and I will be central to most of the stories you'll see, you'll also see a lot more of the rest of the team and get to know them a little bit. One of the things I like most about being self-employed is that I get to hand-pick and curate the roster of pilots that we get to fly with, and ferry pilots are a dynamic bunch, each with interesting stories to share. Going forward, I want to try to dig a little deeper into the world we operate in, spend more time rolling tape in the moments outside of the cockpit as well as the view from within. This new format is giving me ideas that I'm excited to try. Even though this is a wrap on the summer 2025 edition, I hope you'll subscribe to Cockpit Casual so you're ready when the next series drops. There will be plenty of surprises and stories for you to take in. And as always, there's room in the jump seat should you decide to come along.
Is it starting to hit you now, Nathan?
Is it what?
The exhaustion.
I don't know how you stay away that long.
Thank you.
fucking dominant.
I don't think that's wrong. That's, I didn't care.
Yeah. I mean, I was like, oh, that's right. Yeah, he's my minor.
The other thing is that those pieces are not going to be completely used, right? They're going to be some.
See what shirt I wore tonight? Today?
What's that?
Some meals.
Some day days.
Nice. So you got a Phillies hat on today because we got the Mets tonight.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know. Big we put series. A pizza right there.
Known people in their youth,
yeah,
and then as they get older, what they, you know,
yeah,
just kind of turn into generic looking old men.
Totally. Joe had like a big curly fro.
Yeah. Well, it's like I've got friends that I knew in high school, and now they like half of them are bald now and stuff like that, but I like almost still see them as like,
yeah,
the dude with long hair or something.
Totally. Yep.
I still see you, that dude with like the sideburns.
Oh god. I still see those pictures.